ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 1 एंटाइटल्ड किंग सुदुम्न्य बिकम्स अ वुमन टेक्स्ट नंबर 40 आचार्य आत्कामम लब्ध्वा पुंसं व्यवस्थया पालयम् आस जगतिम् न अभ्यनन्दन् स्मतं प्रजा ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस श्रील एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद ट्रांसलेशन Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sudumna regained his desired maleness every alternate month, and in this way ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. Purport. The citizens could understand that the king was transformed into female every alternate month, and therefore he could not discharge his royal duty. Consequently, they were not very satisfied. 41 and 42. Thus ending the chapter. Tasyotkala gayo rajan vimalasta vimalascha trayasuta dakshina patha rajano rajano babu vir dharma vassala. O King Sudumna had three very pious sons named Utkal, Gaya and Vimal, who became the kings of dakshina patha. Tata परिणते काले प्रतिष्ठानपति प्रभु पुरुरवावस्य उत्सृज्य गां पुत्रया गतो वनम् ट्रांसलेशन परपट देयर आफ्टर व्हेन द टाइम वाज राइप व्हेन सुदुम्न्या द किंग ऑफ द वर्ल्ड वाज सफिशिएंटली ओल्ड ही डिलीवर्ड द एंटायर किंगडम टू हिज सन पुरुरवा एंड एंटर्ड द फॉरेस्ट परपट अकॉर्डिंग टू द वैदिक सिस्टम वन विद इन द इंस्टीट्यूशन ऑफ वर्ण एंड आश्रम must leave his family life after reaches 50 years of age. Panchashad urdhvam vanam vrajet. Thus Sudumna followed the prescribed regulations of Varnashram by leaving the kingdom and going into the forest to complete his spiritual life. Om Acharya anugrahat kamam labdhva pumsam vyavasthaya Palayam asa jagatin nabhyanandan smatam praja. Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sudumna regained his desired maleness every alternate month. And in this way ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. So this is a very unique chapter in the Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And where we find that one of the kings or one of the descendants in the dynasties of Manu, Vaivasvat Manu, and there is a very very bewildering concept being present in the Vedas, in the Shastras, that such a thing could even happen. In fact, this is the height of imagination that a living entity cannot fathom. That the power of great living entities or great the great controllers of this Mahadev and his power to give a curse and to redeem that curse. And this is when Sudumna enters, King Sudumna enters along with his entourage in the forest. Lord Shiva is angered because it's a private territory, it has no trespassing allowed. In the earlier times, there are no billboards or boards put up, no trespassing allowed. it was understood that the power of the personalities there would be enough for the people to be even enough fearful to trespass. But if someone would do so by mistake, and this is how King Sudumnya was cursed to become female because he violated the conditions laid out. And so it is Vasishtha Rishi who did some patchwork, at least redeemed the situation by at least gaining manhood for Sudumnya, at least on a monthly basis. So practically Sudumnya Maharaj was always aware of the mercy of his spiritual master. The very moment he would become female, he would realize that this is my fallen condition, and he would be always in that mood that I should be worthy to be a qualified recipient of mercy of my spiritual master. He would be real grateful for whatever he had in his life. And then when he would regain his manhood, he would be very grateful to his spiritual master for having redeemed himself from this awkward condition. So today, we are thinking that being this theme, we are continuing the Janmashtami with Srila Prabhupada's appearance, Nandotsav, and celebrating spiritual master's appearance means to remember him, to be inspired from him, and then to become dedicated to him. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is our eternal spiritual master, and that what he has done for us, we are eternally damned, eternally condemned, eternally cursed to suffer this material existence. And depending upon our seeds, upon our previous karmic reactions, we might also go through the alternate cycles of suffering and happiness. And in the Vaishnava's and practicing sadhaka's life, there is always that alternation. There are some periods and some times of elation, inspiration, joy, ecstasy, and after some time the other phase starts: loneliness, feeling lost, feeling unworthy, feeling that I could do more but I can't do because I have so many of my problems: physical problems, mental problems, health problems, relation problems. And sometimes we feel that we should withdraw like the tortoise. So these alternations do come in the life of a sadhaka. And because we are connected to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we should always hope and we should always know that the good times are always going to come. So sometimes once Shuta Kirti Prabhu was always accompanying Srila Prabhupada wherever he would go. So there would be an airplane, and Prabhupada, the time would come when the announcement would be made that fasten your seat belts. And Prabhupada actually would never fasten the seat belt and just get up when they would make that announcement and just go to the bathroom. And then Shuddha Kirti also used to walk as being an assistant. And he would say that, you know, Prabhupada was in the spiritual world, but I was in the material world. So I was feeling very, very awkward. Everyone is being told to fasten their seatbelts, and here we are two personalities, and Prabhupada is transcendental. But you know, I am like in the material world. So I be there and I feel a little bit embarrassed. And then Prabhupada would be coming out, and everyone would be hoping and waiting to wait for Srila Prabhupada to arrive to be welcome. And when Prabhupada would be welcome, there would be many devotees at the airport launch. Then there would be greeting with kartals, this mridangam and kirtan and flowers. And everyone was dancing and shouting and screaming, Jai Prabhupada, and we'll be glorifying Prabhupada. And then Shuddha Kirti Prabhu would be in the back, you know, just back with Prabhupada, and then we'll be just standing. And sometimes really he felt very, very well that, you know, devotees love Prabhupada so much. All devotees, they love Prabhupada so much, but I have no love for Prabhupada. So once he was feeling this, he actually seldom asked very questions to Prabhupada. So he asked this question to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, no, all devotees love you so much. He was feeling a little alternate mood of, you know, I actually don't love Prabhupada so much as others love. Prabhupada, everybody, all devotees love you so much, but you know, I don't have the love for you. So Prabhupada asked him, so you like your service? Yes, Prabhupada. He was a personal assistant. He was personally assisting Srila Prabhupada, cooking for Prabhupada, massaging Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you like your service? He said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, that is love. Service is love. You just continue serving this way. So sometimes in Krishna consciousness, we feel we are just serving. We are not doing anything. But that is just not just feeling that there is lack of love. That love is in the service. And that is being expressed in the service. So, this was Srila Prabhupada. In the early days of Srila Prabhupada, when he was just at the 22nd Avenue storefront, Prabhupada was just living simply in a small room with practically no furniture. And he would never ask for anything. Prabhupada never asked for anything. And then once Garga Muni, Prabhu that time, he asked Prabhupada, you're doing so much for us, because Prabhupada was feeding them. Prabhupada was cooking for them. Prabhupada was personally guiding them. Prabhupada was giving them philosophy. Prabhupada was being like an elderly gentleman, father, grandfather for all of them. So Prabhupada would say that, they will ask Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you're doing so much for us. How can we help you? How can we serve you? Prabhupada said, by assisting the spiritual master. That's all. But that was not a specific answer. So he thought, what way can I assist Srila Prabhupada? So he saw that Prabhupada had his trunks of the Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries, the literatures to be commented, edited, and being translated and purported. So Prabhupada was writing this literatures, translating very regularly. So he felt that he just went out on a store. He had some money. And he went to a store and saw a Grandic store. A Grandic was a brand at that time. And they saw a dictaphone. And as soon as he saw the dictaphone, he realized, yes, Prabhupada is... Because Prabhupada was, when he was writing those commentaries, was translating and purporting those commentaries, he was index on his index finger, he was writing on the typewriter that took given by Brahmanand Prabhu that time. Because Prabhupada practically came there, I think the Prabhupada's typewriter was stolen that time. When he came with the typewriter. Prabhupada came with a typewriter. He knew. Prabhupada was methodical right from Vrindavan. He was not spontaneous. Right? Vrindavan Babaji's and he was spontaneous. No, he was very much concerned because he had edited, published, printed Back to Garden magazine. He knew that he had to perform such a Herculean task and he had to be organized. So Prabhupada had a typewriter at that time. The maximum that he could get in his resources was a typewriter. And Prabhupada with his two index fingers would typewrite painstakingly. He would not write. When he would translate, his translated was directly typing. And Prabhupada, and then sometimes he told Hayagriva Prabhu that, can you do this editing for me, proofreading for me? And he said, Prabhupada is done. So he thought that service is done. Sometimes we like the service to be finished. Okay, it's done. But then Prabhupada said, oh, there's more. He said, yes, I can do more. So then Prabhupada said, come and see. Prabhupada wanted to see how much is more. Prabhupada opened his closet, and was a closet full of these various commentaries and various purports, various translations to be done. And he said, Prabhupada, this is a work for a lifetime. So Prabhupada said, lifetimes, practically. And then, there's so much of work. Everyone knew what Prabhupada was up to. So they felt, you know, Prabhupada must be able to do this very nicely. We should assist them, assist him in his service. So then, that's how they got him a typewriter, and then Gargamuni Maharaj bought this $150 worth at that time, dictaphone. And when he went to the store, he was very happy. Then I'm going to give Prabhupada a very important instrument which will help in his service. And it's a very tech-savvy instrument. You know how to operate it and you should know how it works. Prabhupada is coming from Vrindavan and he may not have seen these dictaphones and may not have a concept of the dictaphone. So he went to the store, actually when buying this product, he got a lot of information how to operate it and how to manipulate and how to figure it out for optimum performance. And he thought when he gives to Prabhupada would ask him, you know, how to operate, and then he'll get, you know, the opportunity to tell Prabhupada, you know, how to use this way, you know, this. Prabhupada took this dictaphone, looked at it, and Prabhupada started to figure it out. And Prabhupada said, thank you very much. And he was like amazed. Prabhupada didn't require anything, didn't require any instructions how to. And Prabhupada exactly knew how to use the dictaphone. This is how, again, when Prabhupada was in the 22nd Avenue, very intimate pastimes will take place. Prabhupada would cut apples for prasadam because there was no facility that time. He would take this, and what he would do, he would have only few apples. So he would see the audience, how many are there, and then, you know, during the program, during the class, he would make an estimation how many pieces have to be cut. And then, you know, according to this number of devotees that had come, this hippies, he would cut this very meticulously, and then he would cut these apples and pass these pieces, and then Prabhupada would send a small basket for donation. And then, you know, that would go around and people would put some dollars, some cents, and that would come back. And amazingly, these devotees, Brahmananda Prabhu said that Prabhupada started counting the money there itself only. And like, you know, they had no idea that, you know, Swamiji, someone said, you know, Swamiji has a, one of friends of Brahmananda Prabhu said that Swamiji was there at the storefront, some Indian Swami, and he's out there. But then he said, he records his classes, he records. Prabhupada recorded his own classes. The first class that was ever recorded in ISKCON was recorded by Srila Prabhupada. Now, can we imagine that, you know, we are speaking and we have a recording instrument here. And all devotees are watching. My God, he feels himself so important that his class is to be recorded. Anyone would think like that. So, not knowing who was speaking, they thought this Swami is possessed and is too arrogant and is too self, has a very high estimation of himself. So, you know, why do we don't go to a sadhu who has a gadget in front of him, the Swami. The traditional thing was that, you know, he has to be dispossessive. I won't go there. And he has a typewriter. He's a kind of Swami that you don't understand him. You know, personality doesn't match with the characteristics of a sadhu. But then Brahmananda Prabhu went ahead and actually Prabhupada was counting money and everyone was amazed. That too in front of everyone. And then next time they found that, you know, and Prabhupada would buy cereals, buy some spices and the food from those collections. Prabhupada really did Madhu Curry in that transcendental sense in America. Just living upon what came. And then Brahmananda Prabhu said, you know, I must really do something to serve Swamiji. So one day when that basket was being circulated, he wanted to surprise Prabhupada and he put $100 bill in that. It was like unusual that, you know, $100 bill will come in that basket. Usually cents would come, some dollar would come. And then He wanted to see reaction of Prabhupada, what Prabhupada do. And then when it passed back and it went to that place, Prabhupada was counting and he saw this $100 bill. And he was looking at Prabhupada, you know, what would Prabhupada, would ask, who has given this amount? And he was anticipating that. And then Brahman Prabhu saw Prabhupada counted and he saw this $100 bill. And Prabhupada just looked up. Prabhupada looked directly at Brahman Prabhu. Not even anticipating, not even guessing who would be that. And that's all. That was enough. Prabhupada recognized his service. This is how everyone, and that's when later all of these things leads to one conclusion. Prabhupada said that I want my devotees to be independently thoughtful. I don't want to tell them, you serve like this, you serve like this, you serve like this. And that's where Srila Prabhupada differed from all the acharyas, in the sense that all the gurus that came previously, they practically expected so many things from their followers. And they expected them to do the similar way. But Srila Prabhupada wanted the disciples to be independently thoughtful, creative, and thus be responsible for their own contribution. They will feel themselves being worthy of their own appreciation. So this is why Prabhupada did not want wanted his disciples to be mechanical robotics. That, you know, he has to serve only this way. So this was a wonderful feature of Srila Prabhupada. He allowed each and everyone to grow his own way. So this is how the earlier days, and actually the Gaurang Prabhu mentioned the day before, on Janmashtami day, that how that Macmillan book, the Macmillan edition of Bhagavad Gita, was being printed. So just to elaborate a little bit, because that's what hearing from, if you want to know about Prabhupada, it is Brahmananda Prabhu says, either you should have been with him, or you should have been hearing from someone who has been with him. Amazingly, he was speaking. I just met Brahmananda Prabhu once after the Disciplines Festival in Vrindavan, went to his room, and then I was asking about how was one of some, can we share some few memories more? And he said that he was, these devotees, disciples, they go very much into detail of Prabhupada's pastimes. They go really deep. For them, Prabhupada was not a historical figure, was not an acharya. He was a pure devotee, which they could see him face to face. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada was there, none of them could know Krishna, could not be convinced that Krishna exists. But when they used to see Srila Prabhupada, They could feel that Krishna exists by seeing Srila Prabhupada. They had that confidence, yes, Krishna is there. That was their level of understanding. So he was saying that Prabhupada was recording his own classes, and later when he gave it to his disciples, they had that reel-to-reel tape recorder. And then they would record when the class would be there. Prabhupada would hardly give a class more than 30 minutes, 35 minutes. But the 30 minutes was the reel-to-reel tape, one side. It was a huge tape at those times. So when this tape would stop recording because the side was over, so it will give a click. And Prabhupada would be giving the class and would stop giving the class. And he would wait for his disciple to turn, to lock it, the other side. And when he start recording, then Prabhupada will start speaking. We used to be in sound system some years ago, and there is a system. There used to be, earlier this used to be a system that, you know, we used to record and we would turn the tape, immediately the speaker would continue his talk. And we had to wait where there would be a long pause when you would see the tape, you know, going towards the end. And then wait, when the speaker is going to give a long pause. And then immediately stop it, open, eject it, put the next side, immediately start recording. You lose some time to fill that gap. And if the speaker has just continued, you lose those words. Then we had a different system where it was self-turning, in the sense that it was reverse recording automatically. So then we were peaceful. We didn't have to change without losing any words. But Srila Prabhupada was more concerned about his recordings because he knew the value of each word that Prabhupada was speaking. Each word was full of Krishna, was heavy. And therefore, Prabhupada was wonderfully making this this point available that Prabhupada's each transcendental vani is valuable for all the disciples, grand disciples, great-grand disciples, great-great-grand disciples, and for the future of humanity. No one could envision like Prabhupada, visionary. He could see something, the value of a small thing which had a great importance. And then this Macmillan printing also was a very fundamental issue that many of Allen Ginsberg was given. He was coming to Prabhupada and he was also a published poet. So Prabhupada told him, can you print this Bhagavad Gita for me? So yes, I have many publishers, I'll get it done. He tried to get it done. Allen Ginsberg tried to get this Bhagavad Gita published from his own publisher, and he couldn't do so for a long time. Then Rai Ram Prabhu came, and he tried to do that. He also could not succeed. Then Prabhupada just, everyone was wondering, and Brahmananda Prabhu was thinking that, to get a book published, you need to know how to get a book published. There is a proper method, channel, process, and then you get the book published. So if they wanted to go through the whole process of how to getting a book published. And Prabhupada told Brahmananda Prabhu one fine day, they recorded this Happening album, in that Prabhupada's kirtan is there, the famous kirtan. And then when that Happening album was very famous, they got a letter from Macmillan, someone from Macmillan, and that was an accountant. And then finally this, Prabhupada said, this is a letter from Macmillan. Yes, Prabhupada said, we must try to get this book published from Macmillan. And he said, Prabhupada, what to do? Should we take the manuscript or should we take the introductory note about what your letter is, what your achievements are all about? Prabhupada said, no, just tell them that we have a Gita to publish. He goes to the accountant, gives him the album, and immediately that James Wedd comes out, and he just says, well, I have a Gita to publish. And immediately he says, yes. And then the manuscript is delivered, and Prabhupada is, and then of course Brahmananda comes to Prabhupada and says that, Prabhupada, it's true, it's getting published. They've agreed. And Prabhupada was absolutely nonchalant, it's okay. I mean, what's the great deal about it? It was going to happen anyways. And then, again, there was another, Alan Watts was another person in Macmillan, and he was going through the manuscript and said that this edition, this translation of Bhagavad Gita is not acceptable because this is an interpretation. And how can Swamiji write, everywhere there is Krishna, Krishna, Krishna? And he said that, how can Swamiji interpret in this way? He writes that it should not be interpreted, but that itself is an interpretation, so how can we accept that interpretation? So immediately, Brahmananda Prabhu went to James Wedd and said, well, Alan Watts says that, this thing, oh, just forget it, that's rubbish. We'll get it published anyways. So this is how Prabhupada's desire was driving everything. In fact, once on the morning walk with his disciples, along with in Jew, Prabhupada was walking and suddenly he hit the cane on the ground and just faced Brahmananda Prabhu and said, are you convinced of Krishna? And Prabhupada would say, just sitting, saying right in the eye. And if you wanted to say yes, but then, Prabhupada would, you can't just be lying to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was so much convinced that he wanted his disciples to be similarly convinced. In fact, in one of the, in GBC meeting in LA, where all the newly initiated sannyasis were there, and Prabhupada asked these questions right suddenly, that are you all convinced of Krishna? Immediately said, and Prabhupada was asking, and the whole room was silent. Prabhupada said, I am convinced of Krishna, therefore I am pushing on this moment. It's not a question of I believe, we believe. We have to be convinced of Krishna, that Krishna exists. Only then you can push this Krishna consciousness movement. So I want you to be more than me. And that was Prabhupada's emergency and urgency for everyone. And he would be doing this on and off with his devotees, trying to jerk them out from their complacency that they were just doing because Prabhupada was telling them. We can't be practicing Krishna consciousness on someone else's conviction for long. We may be practicing bhakti on someone else's inspiration, and we are inspired, and we are, but ultimately this has to come from ourselves. Unless it is going to come from ourselves, we are not going to do it in a way that Prabhupada wanted us to do. He wanted us to become really thoroughly, deeply convinced about what we are doing and why we are doing what we are doing. And then, therefore, Prabhupada would always train his disciples. Upendra Prabhu in the initial years was was like with on and off with Prabhupada. He was staying in an apartment, and he asked Prabhupada that, you know, Prabhupada, how can you love a girl when she's not with you, or when you don't love, how can you love a girl without knowing her and without being with her? So he was understanding, Prabhupada understood his question, that, you know, so you're staying alone in the apartment and you're having association with the opposite sex and your intoxication. Yes, Prabhupada, come and stay with me. And then again he had this problem. So he went to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, how can you love a girl without actually knowing her, staying away from her? Because Prabhupada had this injunction that, you know, illicit sex, but that question was there. After getting married, Prabhupada, can we have sex? And Prabhupada said, yes, once a month, only for begetting children. And then all people were morose and said, oh, better to forget it altogether. Prabhupada, that's it. That's you got the message. And then this Upendra Prabhu was still, and Prabhupada said, took him by the hand, took it to the window. So you want a girl? Pick one of them. And Prabhupada said, love is only for Krishna and no one else. There is no love in this material world, Prabhupada bluntly said to him. And Prabhupada was very much, Shruta Kirti Prabhu gives a very nice insight into Prabhupada's daily routine. This shows how Prabhupada was meticulous right from his own life. And Prabhupada had his cooker, his cooking, his personal cook and assistant would cook for Prabhupada, and he had this cooker. This cooker is still there in Jhu, I think so, in Prabhupada's quarters. You'll find that aluminum cooker, and there's a four-tired cooker. Not look like a cooker at all, actually, in one sense. Cooker means you would expect something to be very unique. And Prabhupada wanted all of his meal being cooked in that cooker, very specifically. So this cooker, they would put everything, rice, dal, sabji, in the cooker. He would leave out to the fire after the cooking pot, and then come back. By the time that things were getting cooked in the cooker, he would massage Prabhupada. He would massage Prabhupada, and then by the time the massage was over, Prabhupada would go, take a shower, and get himself ready. He would have laid Prabhupada's clothes and everything right up there. And by the time everything was cooked, and now that he was rolling chapatis, by the time Prabhupada was fresh, putting up his tilak, coming out, and Prabhupada was ready for lunch. Or Prabhupada mostly facing the wall for the lunch, usually. Not talking to anyone, peacefully meditating upon the prasadam, honoring prasadam. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu would come and fluffy chapatis, very nice, very, and Prabhupada would just pierce them, the steam would come out. And like every chapati was like that, just the right timing. And he said mostly everything just went as per the schedule. And Prabhupada would say, to the people whom that he would be meeting, that one should, Prabhupada did not show by his example in this way, that one should not waste much time grooming the body for the bodily necessities, and should be done with utmost precision. And Prabhupada magnifying that thing, and would tell to his guests, you see, my lunch gets cooked in 45 minutes. the entire lunch. Sometimes in India, people cook, you know, for 2 hours, 3 hours, and so on and so long. But Prabhupada's cooking, Prabhupada said, in 45 minutes, and in within that, I have my massage, I have my shower, and I take my lunch. And Prabhupada was not just taking massage. Prabhupada was answering 25 letters. Daily, there would be mail coming to Prabhupada and by disciples, and answering these letters during massage. Prabhupada loved multitasking in that sense. And he wanted, you know, to be very efficient in that way. So he didn't want to waste, he minimized time for bodily activities. And sometimes a Sanskrit editor came. In fact, he came to Prabhupada many times to ask for some advices as to what is the correction, what is the addition. And then first he came, he offered full obeisances, Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutalen. Next time he came back again, and this time he just was a quicker one than before. The third time he came was a much more brisk one. And the last time he came was a hatchet obeisances, just bowing down, immediately coming up. And Prabhupada noticed that. Prabhupada said, this is the sign of fall down. And to take spiritual master cheaply. One other incident happened, and in fact that devotee drifted away from Srila Prabhupada. And one of the devotees in Jew, one person, a young boy was there, everyone was sitting and Prabhupada was there, just coming up there. And everyone was offering obeisances when Prabhupada came. And this one boy was just standing with his hands folded. Prabhupada said, this is the beginning of his fall down. And so that familiarity breeds contempt. When even we are with a very great pure devotee of the Lord, a great Acharya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, deities, we may take them cheaply over a period of time. Take them for granted and take these things very casually. And Maya does not take us very instantly away from Krishna. She takes in installments. Till time we don't realize that we are drifted so much. And Prabhupada would be very careful that all the standards were met strictly and no changes were made. Prabhupada would serve these chapatis, hot chapatis in LA. And they were serving, Shudakriti was serving chapatis in LA. And that time, Shilavati was the first lady pujari there. And she thought that Prabhupada is getting nice chapatis, hot chapatis, but the deities are not getting like that. So she started offering hot puris one by one in the altar at the time of offering. And she was going, she was making one puri, and she was offering there, and then again she was going, making another puri, and doing like that. And she told that, you know, I am doing like that, like what you're doing for Prabhupada. So he was feeling a little unnerved, and he was feeling a little nervous, and he came to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, that, you know, Shilavati is doing this way. Prabhupada said, this is nonsense. You Americans, you just want to change everything. Whatever I've given you, you start changing a little bit of that. Tell her to stop it. Other times, Prabhupada had this barfi sandesh, and Prabhupada said, this, if you cook this barfi sandesh very nicely, if you dry it up nicely, it will last for long, and you can keep them while traveling, and whenever you have need for sweet supplement, you can take it. And then because even Shudakriti Prabhu said, until I came to India, I realized that I was just serving Prabhupada American prasadam. It was not the kind of prasadam that would be traditional, because he kept washing rice 3 times before putting in the cooker. And Prabhupada said, why are you washing? I mean, there's no point in washing. We need this water. The rice has to be cooked with this supplement. And then there was a lot of things, and Prabhupada actually trained each of them very personally how to cook prasadam. Prabhupada tolerated for the mission. He wanted his mission to be accomplished, and he never saw his own personal conveniences. In fact, when he went to the West, he had his cereals and his vegetables being kept in the same fridge where the meat was stored. How much Prabhupada had to endure. This shows that the mission is always greater than the personal convenience. And one should, Prabhupada writes in one of the very wonderful purports in the first canto, when Arjuna becomes defeated, coming back, and Prabhupada writes that Arjuna was, when there has that fight was necessary, he fought with his relatives, killed his relatives for the mission of Krishna. But then when Prabhupada writes then that statement, one should adjust the pace of his activities. One should adjust the activities of his life in pace with the mission of the Lord. One should not pace or one does adjust the mission of the Lord according to one's own pace. That's not the meaning. The meaning is that one must adjust the activities of his life in pace with the mission of the Lord. And in doing so, one can directly go home back to Godhead. That's in this very lifetime. Prabhupada writes a very classic purport. And Prabhupada did that in his own life. His mission was greater than any of his personal conveniences. Prabhupada, this devotee started making something with carob, puff rice, powdered milk, and and peanut butter, some sweet. And they gave to Prabhupada, thinking that Prabhupada would love this very fancy sweet. Prabhupada said, what is this nonsense? I have given you nice sweets, barfi, sandesh. Why are you deviating? Because Prabhupada knew that this one deviation will lead to so many thousands of deviations later. And therefore Prabhupada wanted his disciples to go really strict on his standards. And therefore, he was so much carefully guiding his disciples. He wanted his disciples to attend the morning program, and sometimes when his party would go together in some new place and there was some time lapse and all, so he would ask, where is this so and so? So I didn't see you in the morning program. Prabhupada would be a personal leader, monitor, supervisor, translator, editor, publisher, everything by himself. He did everything by himself. And sometimes he told that if you think you're advanced, that you don't need to come for morning program, then you have to come to the morning program to show the example. So even if you think that you're advanced and you don't need it, you come for showing examples for others. And then Prabhupada told to Shruta Kirti Prabhu, do you take nap in the afternoon? Prabhupada said, Shruta Kirti Prabhu said, no, I don't take a nap, because he was brought up in an environment near Vrindavan where there was no naps allowed. Even no less sleep was there. Always there was less sleep. And when they were asked the question, oh, are you reading the Bhagavad Gita? No, we don't read Bhagavad Gita here. We live Bhagavad Gita here. That was the motto. We are living Bhagavad Gita. We have no time to read. You have to find your own time to read the Bhagavad Gita during your lunch time, if you can do that. While taking lunch, you can read. That was the kind of culture that he was brought up into. So he had no idea of taking nap in the afternoon. Prabhupada said, oh, actually, I take a nap in the afternoon. I have to take rest for 1 hour because I'm old. I'm getting old now. and in old age, you don't get sleep in one installment. You know, it's broken. Prabhupada was Acharya. He was 75. And Prabhupada was comparing himself to all of us young who were like, you know, age of his grandchildren. Because Prabhupada did everything he spoke. Sometimes devotees ask, when did Prabhupada chant his 16 rounds? Right? Did he chant on his beats? Prabhupada was always chanting. And he said that, you know, Prabhupada was doing his Gayatri, was doing his chanting, was doing his morning walks very religiously. He was up in time for the Bhagavatam class. Start on time, end on time. Not like us. So, I understand that. So, at least I should try to follow on this day. That Prabhupada is. So this is how Srila Prabhupada lived his life for all of us. And he did just want to give us a formula. He just wanted us to live, believe by ourselves on our own conviction, and then give ourselves completely in a way that we would fulfill all the minimum requirements, at the same time assist Srila Prabhupada in his mission in an independently thoughtful way. There are many various ways of serving Srila Prabhupada, but one must do it to the best of one's capacity, what one can do. And that's why Prabhupada was flexible, and he made a house in which the whole world could live, not only live, but also live in a way that would encourage and enthuse so many conditioned souls to take shelter of Krishna, and in this way receive the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. In this way, we find that how grateful one should remain in this way, even though we have been cursed in a way to be condemned to suffer this material existence. We are very fortunate that we are struggling in the mission of Srila Prabhupada. We are very blessed, and in this way we can reciprocate with Srila Prabhupada's various struggles, to always remind ourselves that it took a lot of for Srila Prabhupada to have us here. And therefore it is our duty, it is our responsibility to give it back to others, and in this way we can give back to Prabhupada. Jai Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai.